This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. After months of teasing Dragon Ball FighterZ, it's finally released. Joining me to review this title and more is Reviews and Previews Editor at EGM Now, Ray Carcello. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me on again, Mason.
Now, I've been really looking forward to this game, but I want to know what you think about it. Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dragon Ball FighterZ is fantastic. I found out the other day, by the way, it's actually, even though there's a Z at the end, it's technically still pronounced like an S.
Really?
A lowercase S. Yeah, it's really weird, but because they wanted to have the Z in there, but it's technically pronounced just Dragon Ball FighterZ.
And, okay, I'm gonna start doing that then.
Hey, I've been mispronouncing it for months myself, so it literally took like one of the Bandai Namco people reaching out to tell me. So, but yeah, Dragon Ball FighterZ is fantastic. I mean, if you love Dragon Ball Z, it's a really, first off, the look is absolutely amazing. It's a two-dimensional, sprite-based fighter, 3v3, sort of like Marvel vs. Capcom. But you have a couple dozen fighters from the show over the years. Everybody from Goku to Gohan, and there's adult Gohan and Trunks and Vegeta and all the different stages of Majin Buu. And it's really a fantastic game. It's made by the guys at Arc System Works. They did games like Blaze Blue and Guilty Gear. And you know, I can't believe it how fast the game feels, and it feels like you're playing the anime at times. There's these wonderful moments where you can throw your opponent into mountains and asteroids and volcanoes, and it just somehow they refine a way to boil down the essence of Dragon Ball Z into this fighting game, and they did it without all the droning on dialogue of the anime, and it just feels fantastic.
Yeah, I'm in love with this game, too, but I haven't been able to unlock everything. Do you know how many characters are in this game so far?
Well, there's two dozen characters, and they're going to be adding more, I think they announced today, by DLC. So I can't give you a final number, but right now there's two dozen characters, and you're going to have, like I said, you've got all these, all the characters from the show from over the years, so including the brand new Android 21.
Yeah, Android 21, that's the big bad, right, of the story mode?
Yeah, so the story mode is interesting because it takes you up through, like, some of the classic sagas, and then it gives you this additional story on top of it that kind of continues everything. So you have Android 21, who's supposed to be the strongest of all the androids, and she's there to absorb everyone and gain all their power. And she's the big bad now of the game, and she's a great new character, and really kind of, again, built in the vein of the traditional anime, and really kind of continuing that story in a very organic way.
You said that the game was made by the people who made Blaze Blue. Man, that explains the controls so much more, because there's a lot of them. There's so many different types of inputs to do a whole bunch of different types of things, and so far I've just been able to face roll on my controller. Have you been having any difficulty with the controls at all, or is it just me?
No, I mean, it's definitely a more complex. They're known for having a more complex fighting system than most. It's very much a, it's kind of like that, like Blaze Blue and Guilty Gear, of course, but also kind of like King of Fighters and very much that niche Japanese fighting game ethos, I guess, to have very complex controls. But if you can master them, you can pull off some really spectacular stuff. And I think that, especially if you're used to games like Injustice or Mortal Kombat or even now Street Fighter, that they've simplified their controls to kind of lower the barrier of entry and trying to get more people in it, and obviously kind of hype the competitive scene. And while I think Dragon Ball FighterZ is going to have a strong competitive scene, it won't be nearly as strong, probably, because of this high barrier of entry for controls. So yes, the controls are very complicated, but if you can learn them, you can definitely pull off some truly spectacular and special finishers, again, ranging from like Goku's Kamehameha to Frieza's Death Ball to things that are, you know, even more crazy and complex. And you can have partner finishers. You can, you know, where kind of like Marvel vs. Combat, you have multiple characters on screen at once, and you all do your finisher at the same time. But yeah, it does take some time and some getting used to. for sure. But I will say, at the very least, I felt that even if you don't learn the high-end finishers, the stuff that ends up using like three of your key meet, you know, three bars of your key meter and all this other stuff, I think that it does at least do a decent job of, you can still button mesh and still get through the story and advance. You might not be competitive, but you'll at least probably be able to still enjoy the game if you even as a button masher.
Yeah, the story mode, what I liked about it too is there was little question marks by some of the encounters, and those were for the tutorials. So you can actually learn how to play the game while competing in the story mode. Because sometimes in fighting games, they'll have like a, you have to go through this tutorial before you can even start anything. And I kind of like that in the story mode. It's like, hey, if you want to earn some extra money, you know, finish off these tutorial things. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, they do a nice job of making it optional, because I'm sure that there are going to be folks out there who will probably are already mapping inputs and all that other stuff and really memorizing things and don't need the game tutorials. But for the rest of us, I appreciate that they're there.
I'll be honest, though, with how complex all the controls are, I'm going to really look forward to seeing this at like Evo or some other gaming tournament, just to see how badass this game can really be when it's unleashed by a pro.
Yeah, no, I think it won't have as strong a pro community as some of those with lower barrier games with lower barrier of entries, but it'll definitely have, those who master it are going to pull off some spectacular things. And yet, Evo is going to be great. It's going to be great this year.
Another fighting game is Street Fighter V Arcade Edition that was released last month. What are some of the changes they made in this game?
So to me, there's like three major changes. Of course, obviously the first one is in the title, right? Arcade Edition.
Yeah.
There's a brand new arcade mode for those who like to play single player, play offline. But what they've done now is that there's six different story branches in the arcade mode, and you can choose with your fighter which ones you want to do. And it explores different chapters of the Street Fighter saga over the years. So it kind of gets more in depth to the series history and kind of explains more about all the events leading up to Street Fighter V, while also giving players that traditional arcade mode without being just so rigid as a traditional ladder. So that was really cool. There's also Team Battle, which unfortunately is only offline, and similar to, like, again, Marvel vs. Capcom, you can choose to do either two to five different characters you can choose to put on a team and do 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, 5v5. And that's unfortunately only offline and local. Likely won't be seen in the competitive scene, but is a nice option, again, to give those offline players some more options for what they want to do. And then the third big thing I felt that coming into out of Street Fighter V Arcade Edition is the second V meter that they've included. So that now you have two phases of that, and now each character has a larger V move that can be done. Most of them have been given moves that are completely different. Some of them, though, I'm a little disappointed, are kind of just powered-up versions of their regular V move. But that's a big thing in terms of gameplay that obviously we will see on the competitive scene at some point, which I do appreciate, and I think a lot of other people out there also appreciate, because, again, it adds more depth to the strategy of gameplay. Is it worth it to do the two-level V move, or should I just do two one-level V moves, you know, and whatnot, and kind of having to balance that and figure out how you're going to be competitive in that aspect of it. So those are the three big changes. Two new modes, and I think that big addition on the gameplay side in terms of increasing the V meter. So that's a big deal. I think that fans, if you haven't played Street Fighter V yet, this is the definitive edition for sure. This is the edition you should go out and get. And I think it definitely did a good job of expanding what was already there.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for story mode. I'm not going to lie. And if it expands on the history of Street Fighter, I'd really like to play that.
Yeah, no, I was pleasantly surprised. I really just thought it was going to be a regular ladder. But I think that they realized that if they were going to, you know, go back on their word and basically put out another edition of Street Fighter V, after they initially said that they were just going to do regular updates, I think that they knew they needed to do something different besides just add all the DLC characters and maybe, you know, add a couple other things to gameplay. So it was a nice, pleasant surprise for sure.
So it's the same character roster from the last game?
So it's Street Fighter V's complete roster.
Okay.
So it's the roster plus all the DLC characters that have come out over the past couple, 2 years, I think it's been. Yeah. And they've also announced more DLC characters are coming down the line. I think they're going to finally add Blanca at some point.
Oh, that would be pretty cool. Not going to lie, Blanca's a cool
character.
Yeah,
that was the rumor going around, is that they're going to add a couple more DLC characters, and then finally Ono's favorite character, Blanca, will finally get in the game.
So, man, Capcom's been busy. Another game they came out with is Monster Hunter World. Did you have time to play that one?
Only a bit. It's been a surprisingly busy January. But Monster Hunter World is, again, it's Capcom's attempt at kind of trying to lower the barrier of entry. It's easy to pick up and play, difficult to master action RPG. There's not much story to it. You play a hunter in this, what they're calling the New World, and your ship full of other hunters gets attacked by an elder dragon. And it's basically your job to kind of put the ecosystem around you back into check, finally with you defeating this elder dragon at the end. And it's got a lot of customization, a lot of, killing different monsters will net you certain items. Getting certain items will allow you to upgrade your gear. Upgrading your gear will allow you to take on stronger and stronger monsters. And of course, if you get the PS4 version, you can get the Mega Man costume, which I'm personally a very big fan of. He's not as effective as I'd like him to be in the game, but I'm a huge fan of that. And I love the fact that Capcom is finally starting to re-embrace the Blue Bomber a little bit. But if you've liked Monster Hunter, previous Monster Hunter games, you're gonna love Monster Hunter World, because it's the first proper Monster Hunter console entry in a really long time. Oh, and it adds two-player co-op, which is a nice little tweak. Yep.
Okay, so I don't know where I got this idea from, but are there pets in Monster Hunter? Like, don't you get to make them your pets? I forget completely how this game went.
Yes, you do. You do get your little pets, and most I've seen a lot of cats online and whatnot. You do get pets that can help and assist you in battle, either by healing you or helping you track or do other things, and even maybe doing boosting your attack. They are little helpers there that will that are around. You do get pet companions, we'll say, in Monster Hunter that you can earn and you can find and whatnot.
Now, there's another game I wanted to talk about is UFC 3. Could you tell me about that one?
Yeah, that also just came out February 2nd. So this is one of EA Sports' every other year title. It's not an annual franchise like Madden or NHL or something like that. And I will say this, the game is very pretty. They've worked very hard at making the game look as realistic as possible. And even in terms of like the fighters, the way they get hit, it looks almost startlingly real, like almost scary how real it looks when your fighter's face gets punched in and your nose gets mangled and things like that. So that's very impressive. But unfortunately, like a common problem that they've had with the previous UFC games is that it's just not very fun, because half the game you're just wrestling on the ground with another guy, and it becomes this like button mashing, like trying to swing the right stick around as many times as possible, and the controls feel a little sluggish this go around. The career mode doesn't really do a lot. It's a lot of menu navigation to get to finally end up getting to your fight and train your fighter up. It really fell short in a lot of areas that I felt it needed to be stronger in this go around. And the worst thing of all is they added Ultimate Team to a game that is at its core a one-on-one fighting game. And it's because it's just EA desperately trying to get more money, because it came out today that EA, 60% of their profits last year came from microtransactions. So it's just another attempt at them trying to get you addicted to a collectible card game in a sports game that in particular this one didn't really need it.
You know, when it comes to UFC, I've never actually played the games, but I love to watch people who play it. And I've seen plenty of clips of the physics of that game just go in completely haywire, where the arms just start spinning rapidly. And does that happen like here, or did they kind of fix that?
In my experience with this, I have not seen that yet. You know, I put quite a few hours into it before doing my review, and I have not seen I have not seen that yet. That's not to say that that won't happen at some point, but I definitely think that it's far more cleaned up here than it has been in years past. And I think it's because it really was, the physics were really a focus this year. And the game looks fantastic. It looks better than either of the two previous games that EA has done for UFC. There's no doubt about that. But they still have a long way to go to actually making the game fun.
You know, what about Shadow of Colossus, since we're talking about physics? Have you had time to look at that one yet?
Again, only briefly. A lot has been going on. You know, of course, this is the remake. This is the third version of Shadow of the Colossus. Obviously, the first one, the original, came out on PS2, instant classic. And then it was remastered for PS3. And then it was remade, you know, as part of the Ico and Shadow of the Colossus collection. It was a two-pack. And now it's a complete remake from the ground up. I mean, from what I have seen and played, again, the game is absolutely gorgeous. It's been rebuilt from the ground up. Still a couple of nagging issues persist. I think the camera and your horse still could have used a little more time in the workshop there at the Japan studio from Sony. But I think overall, obviously, if you've never played Shadow of the Colossus, this is the best time possible to go and pick it up. I mean, it looks fantastic, and it plays, for the most part, pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. This was it's stunning. That's all I have to say. It's absolutely stunning. But you can actually look at old strats for the game, and it actually fits with this one. Like, comparison between it's like you're playing the same game, but this one is absolutely beautiful. And you're right about the horse. The horse is, I just couldn't stand the horse after a while. It just wouldn't listen. And you couldn't damage it, so I couldn't punish it for being so bad. But one of the things I didn't like about the game, and this is something that has plagued it for a long time, it's the limp noodle effect. You're holding on, and you're just being flung around like a limp noodle, and you can't move up, you can't move to the side. And this happened in the PS2 version, the PS3 version. And I'm starting to wonder, did they just make it look beautiful and just keep all the same physics, or did they not really try?
I mean, that is pretty much what happened. They kind of focused, in terms of this remake, it was really a effort on really just updating the graphics. I mean, it is true that you can use old strats, and it's most of everything else there has been kind of left alone because... as much as the limp noodle effect may bother you, Mason, a lot of people actually enjoy it because it's the idea that here you are as this person against these colossi, these massive creatures, and you are like a gnat to them, and it's this idea of David versus Goliath, you know. So, in a way, I definitely appreciate what you're saying, but I also think that there's a lot of folks out there who kind of appreciate the effect of what that is trying to convey. I think that's part of the reason why they left that and most of everything else in the game. And like I said, just kind of updated the look and you know, individual blades of grass and whatnot as you're running through fields and things like that.
Yeah, I hope at some point they're going to take this game and make a 2 to it, because I would kill for some DLCs. For one time, I'll actually pay for some DLCs with this.
Well, unfortunately, Mason, I wouldn't hold your breath on that one.
There's a game I am a little curious about. It's God of War. It's supposed to be released on April 20th. Could you tell me the storyline behind that game?
Sure. So it's God of War. Kratos is back. He has a son now, and he's on this quest. He's basically all out to kill the Norse gods. I believe he's lost his new wife. And he's, again, not particularly happy about it. It just seems that everybody who Kratos loves, he's just cursed that everybody around him is going to die at some point. So it's both a coming-of-age story where he's trying to teach his son and pass on his wisdom to his son in the hopes that at least he will be able to survive. And it's also Kratos, again, on a quest for revenge, this time against Norse mythology after having left ancient Greece and tried to move on with his life after, of course, the epic end of God of War 3 and having completely destroyed the Greek pantheon. But unfortunately, it just seems that celestial beings will not leave him alone.
Okay, so this isn't like a reboot. It's a continuation then, right?
If it's anything, it's like a soft reboot, but it's definitely more of a continuation. Like, Kratos hasn't, like, forgotten his past, you know? He's still Kratos, but it's definitely kind of a... They're relaunching a brand new story. I wouldn't be surprised if this had a cliffhanger ending and that they're planning three brand new games, you know, him against the Norse gods and whatnot. But this is definitely more of a soft reboot, if anything, because obviously it's going to have new mechanics. It's going to have, you know, I mean, Kratos can't jump in the game. Yeah, well, he can't jump. It's going to be very much like it's going more of an action RPG route. And it's going to be very, very grounded. And in terms of, like, things that are higher up, it's going to be him kind of, like, boosting his son over ledges and things like that. Almost worryingly kind of sounds like some of the past Resident Evil game. In terms of how you're going to move around and whatnot. It's going to, you know, the camera's going to be much tighter on him, behind him, over the shoulder. Almost like a Dead Space now that I'm thinking about it. You know, unfortunately, I haven't played it yet. Sony's been very, very, tight. All their doors have been tightly closed, and they haven't allowed us really to see any previews of it yet. But it's going to play and handle very, very differently from the previous God of War games. That I can tell you for sure.
Okay, I can appreciate that. I love new stories, and, you know, God of War was a pretty good series. I would love to see more of it. Now, I'm a little bit confused about this one, Nintendo's Labo. Could you talk about that for me? Like, what do you think of this?
So Nintendo realized they could basically put their logo on anything and they would sell. The Labo is basically, it's cardboard. I mean, it's literal cardboard that you can fold and mold and create, use the kits to almost make, almost like Legos in a way, to create different shapes and things in your Switch. Can nestle inside of these different shapes. And there'll be mini games associated with each Labo kit that you can play, like the fishing game and the music game and whatnot. But, yeah, I mean, it's supposed to try and spark people's creativity in different ways and in ways that games usually traditionally don't do. And it's also supposed to show the flexibility of a Nintendo Switch. Unfortunately, I really think that everybody who doesn't work at Nintendo isn't going to probably try to utilize this stuff. So it's not like you're going to suddenly see Bethesda come out with a, like, you know, help develop a Labo or something. And I think it's going to be a very limited series, a limited run. You'll see a few different items. I can't see Nintendo, and, you know, continuing the Labo past its initial run just because it's cardboard.
You know, I was kind of confused about that, and I'm glad you said this. So there's going to be multiple kits, not just one.
Correct. There'll be multiple kits. Already confirmed is the fishing rod, the piano, the robot, and a couple others.
Yeah, because I thought you got some cardboard and you had to, like, Lego it together into a fishing rod and then take it apart and then Lego it into a robot. Okay, so it's a bunch of different kits.
Correct. Each kit, I believe, is going to retail for $69.
$69? How are you going to store this? I'm just curious because I don't have that much room where I live for this kind of stuff. How would you store this? Did they say, like, oh, you can break it down and pop it back out again?
Oh, yeah, you can break it back down into, basically, it's about the size of a small book.
Okay.
When it's all folded back up and whatnot. So I don't know how much time a Labo will take to build or to create, but it will, it definitely, you know, it may be a bigger robot or piano or fishing rod, but it will break down back into a much, much smaller size piece.
Okay. See, I'm curious on where they're going to go with it, and I like what you said about Bethesda, because I don't know about you, but I would wear the dragon armor from Skyrim if they were going to put that in Labo. So maybe, I don't know. They got me there.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see any third-party Labo anytime soon. But, I mean, it is an interesting idea. You know, Miyamoto said in an interview a little while back that he started hiring people at Nintendo. Sometimes I don't even play games. He's looking for as many outside-the-box thinkers as possible. And Nintendo Labo definitely sounds like it was one of those out-of-the-box thinkers who went really, really far outside the box.
Well, you know, innovation, that's what we can always expect from Nintendo. So I'm willing. I'm going to keep an open mind about it, but I may only buy one. $69.99?
Yeah. Yeah, which I believe that also dropped, the first one I believe also dropped on 420.
Okay, cool. Now, I heard of this. I heard Fable was going to come back. Do you know anything about that, or is this just a rumor?
This is just a rumor that Playground Games, the guys who have been helping Turn 10 with the Forza Horizon series the past few years, that supposedly this is true, that they were hiring a lot of people over in England for a new AAA RPG. So a lot of people out there just made the assumption that obviously Microsoft still owns the rights to Fable, that this would be what they're hiring for. I can't say that for sure. I mean, it could just be throwing people off the trail. They could be just ramping up for Forza Horizon 4, which I'm sure we'll see at E3 this coming year, because the Forza Horizon spinoff series at this point, I think, is doing better than regular Forza. And yeah, and then Playground Games helps with that development. So I'd be very surprised if they were working on a new Fable, but I would also be very, very happy because I love the Fable series. Fable Legends was a terrible idea, and I was happy when that game got canceled, even if unfortunately it led to the death of Lionhead a few months later. But I love the Fable series. I hope this rumor is true, but I really think that this is people really desperate for more Fable. It's a stretch. I think it's a legit stretch.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Fable too. I bought an Xbox specifically for Fable. No other game. I bought it just for that one game, and it's a great game. I love the concept that you could be so good that no matter what you do, you could never be evil again. And it's one of the coolest games. And I was kind of hoping that they were gonna start the game up again, the series at least. But I have hope in rumors, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ray, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find you at?
As always, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ray Carcillo. And, of course, you can also read all my reviews and previews and all that other fun stuff over at EGMNow.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.